Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this return episode, we'll be talking about the NFL, what's going down there, as they are already into week two. We will have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will touch on college football, and we will have our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports, for all of your breaking news coverage and our new highlight feature. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die. It's where I'm from. I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statement. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome back into the show. Welcome back to the show. The Just In Time Sports Podcast is returning. We had an unexpected, unprompted break. It's been several weeks now since we last recorded. We kind of missed some of our big landmarks. Like when we do the NFL prediction show, we have where I sit down and pick the grid and pick every single game off the grid. We missed that. We missed a couple of other things that traditionally are Just In Time Sports staples. However, I am excited to be back. And I think I'm back right in time. I mean, obviously, what I'd like to not have missed so long. Absolutely. However, I think I'm in a great spot here. I think it's not fine that we are back because we are entering week two of the NFL season. Actually, week two of the NFL season kicked off just last night. As I'm recording this Friday night while watching the Colorado-Houston game. I'm recording this Friday night, and you guys will hear this Saturday morning. So by the time you hear this, it'll be 2 days. But Thursday night football kicked off last night. It's actually week two. Thursday night football kicked off. It was also the second Thursday night game in a row that my high school team has had. We took a L, unfortunately, but we are 1-1 on the season. We've got a lot of great football ahead of us. I feel like we're going to be a really good team this year. But getting back to the NFL, Thursday night football happened, and it was against the Green Bay. It was the Green Bay Packers against the Washington Commanders. The Green Bay Packers won that game. It felt like by a whole heck of a lot more than they actually won it. They only won the game, and I say only in the NFL, double-digit wins a blowout. You know, like most NFL games are 3.5-4 points as far as difference, maybe 4.5 these days, some of the spread offenses. They won that game by 9, 27-18, and it felt like 19 or 29. They physically controlled that game throughout. The Green Bay Packers look like one of the best teams in the NFC. They look like one of the best teams in the league. And to me, the team to beat in the NFC. And the NFC is so open. And I say this from a quarterback perspective. Now, there's some good teams in the NFC, right? The Rams are really good. The Packers are good. The Packers look amazing. Of course, the Eagles are still around. Not really sure yet what anybody said to make of the Lions, but the Lions, talent-wise, are still there. So there's some good teams in the NFC, but all the quarterbacks are in the AFC for the most part. I think out of the top 15 or so quarterbacks, probably 12 play in the AFC. And so that makes it difficult in the AFC to win games. the NFC, it's always difficult to win the NFL, but it's always easier if you're not playing an elite quarterback. And I think right now the Packers may have the best quarterback in the NFC. Just running it through my head really quickly. Nobody in the NFC East. Nobody in the NFC South. Baker Mayfield has a conversation. Jalen Hurts, I know people are going to say about Jalen Hurts. You can't be a top quarterback and throw for 2,900 yards. I don't care if you win the Super Bowl. NFC West, no. Stafford, maybe. And then the NFC North has Love and Goff. That's it, right? So as far as top quarterbacks, those are the top names. I think Jordan Love is probably right now the best of that group. He's definitely the most talented of that group. And that Packers team looks amazing. I mean, they handled the Commanders for much of that football game. Micah Parsons, what a trade. Like, Micah Parsons is looking like he was born to be a Packer. I mean, that number one looks great on him. It hasn't been worn in Green Bay in like 100 years. And so shout out to Micah Parsons for absolutely balling right now for Green Bay. And to me, truly changing the course of the Green Bay Packers season. I think going into the season, they were a team many people looked at could compete for the NFC. I mean, them, the Vikings, the Lions, the Eagles, of course, the Niners, if they could remain healthy, the Commanders were kind of the names that floated out. Bucks, if they got on the run, kind of were the names that floated out a lot. Regarding the NFC, and the Packers just took it to one of those teams in the Commanders. I mean, the Commanders were a trendy pick to win the NFC. I mean, a very, very trendy pick to win the NFC was the Commanders, and for good reason. I mean, they were already a really good team last year. You really didn't lose anybody. You bring in a Laremy Tunsil. Jaden Daniels gets a year older, a year more into the system, so on and so forth. So you think logically they're going to be better than they were last year. Well, last year they were in the NFC Championship game. So there's only two ways to get better than being in the NFC Championship game, and that's winning the NFC Championship game and or winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the only two ways that you can get better than appearing in the NFC Championship game. And so that is where the Commanders are right now. And who would think we were talking about the Washington franchise being in the championship game, you know, repeaters. But the Packers handled them, right? And the Packers, I mean, behind the tune of Jordan Love throwing for 292 and two touchdowns. Josh Jacobs with over 20 carries, a real ground and pound kind of game, 89 yards and a touchdown. And then the Commanders on the other side, I think for the Commanders, man, that was a wake-up call, right? I don't think that they're a team that's magically, oh, the Commanders are going to go 9-8 now because the Packers beat them on Thursday Night Football. No, I still think they're an 11-win team. I still think that they're going to be really, really good. I think they're going to be a hell of an out in January when you're trying to deal with Jaden Daniels and the rest of that crew. Austin Ekeler tearing his Achilles is a problem. They also lost another player I can't think of right now, but another big name player. They lost to a season ending injury as well. So I think they're going to have to deal with injuries, of course, but that's football, right? Like, that's not something you don't just not have that. They lost Dietrich Wise to a quad injury, and he's out for the season. So when you have to deal with that in Washington, you know, you lose a running back that's supposed to be in your rotation. You lose an edge rusher that was supposed to be one of the leaders in that rotation, especially from a veteran perspective. And so now you are having to rearrange that. Also, taking it on the chin from a Packers team that's going to be really, really good and kind of has stated that they're going to be a team in the NFC. They're not going to be a person that's just a team that just arrives. They're going to be a team. Holding Jaden Daniels to 200 yards passing and one touchdown. And they just could not guard Tucker Kroft. And the Packers players were profusive in his praise post game, saying like, dude, he does it to us every day in practice. Like, you know, you ought to see him in practice cooking us. So we were excited to see it in the game. And just going through the numbers, you know, I'm a big box score guy on this show. The YouTube show is a little more lackadaisical laughing, but the this show is more analytical and technical. Two numbers jumped out to me immediately. 404 to 230, that was the total yards. 135 to 51. That was the rushing yards. As a defensive coordinator, if my yards numbers look like that, I'm feeling confident either in a win or I'm feeling bad in a loss. Like right now, they're showing Houston's to Colorado's yards. It's one, well, now after the touchdown, it's 137 to 33. 10-0 Houston, right? So yards matter. Now, ultimately, points is the decider, but yards is what ultimately matters. Points ultimately matter, sorry, but yards is a big factor. And you can typically find total yards being a big swing and a gap, especially in the NFL, of around 10 points or more. But let's get into the rest of week two. So I selected five games. I won't give any winners. You know how I feel about that, because I usually have Jack's pack, which actually, let me look. Let me see. Probably some pre-production stuff I should have done about what games I can actually say a winner here, and then what games am I going to have to wait on. Just one, it looks like. Okay, so the only one I got to wait on is Bears-Lions, so we'll talk about that one first. So in regards to the Bears and the Lions, this is the Ben Johnson homecoming game. So Ben Johnson, of course, was the offensive coordinator in Detroit last couple of seasons when they were ripping people to smithereens. That was a Ben Johnson-led offense with Jared Goff and Sonic and Knuckles and Jamison Williams and Sam Laporta and all those different guys, and Penei Sewell catching passes. Like, all that was under the guise of Ben Johnson. Well, Ben Johnson, of course, leaves. I mean, Aaron Glenn left as well, but Ben Johnson, of course, leaves, becomes the head coach in Chicago, simultaneously stripping a lot of Detroit's offensive staff to bring with him to Chicago, similar to what Aaron Glenn did on the other side. Aaron Glenn stripped a lot of Detroit's defensive staff to bring with him to New York. Regardless, Ben Johnson now is going to go home, and he's going to play or coach against the offense he helped build. Now, that offense does not look the same without him at all. And Jared Goff, actually, without Sean McVay or Ben Johnson, is 0-19-1 in his career. That's not great. That's not even good. That's not even okay. Like, he's never won a game in the NFL if it wasn't under Ben Johnson or Sean McVay. And he's had other coordinators, right? So that is something that, if I'm the Lions, I have to get rectified. But if I'm the Lions here, what I don't want is a 40-piece from Chicago. Right, I get it. You had no point where you ever gonna fire Dan Campbell, who started his press conference with the famous, "If they knock us down, we're gonna bite a kneecap on the way up." Like, remember that biting kneecaps press conference? And most people thought, "Oh, this is a 1-year hire. Like, he ain't gonna be there long. He's a stopgap guy." And then he got his quarterback in Jared Goff, and they've been riding for years ever since. And I ultimately, but due to that, there was no chance, right, that he was ever gonna get fired. The issue arises if Ben Johnson cooks, right, and he gets a 40-piece, and the Lions look disjointed and disconnected, and fans are fans. They're going to say, well, you could have had that guy, and instead you chose to keep the guy you had. I mean, is it unfair to – if it's unfair to Dan Campbell? Absolutely. Is that narrative going to pop up? Absolutely. So if I'm Dan Campbell, I'm coaching probably harder than I ever have to keep Ben Johnson from having that moment. Because again, if Ben Johnson beats you 40-17, there's going to be a lot of chatter that they made the wrong coaching decision in Detroit. When Ben Johnson decided he was going to leave, they should have moved on from Dan Campbell, elevated Ben Johnson. Like, that's going to happen, right? And it shouldn't. By no means should Dan, even if Dan Campbell loses game 50-0, by no means should Dan Campbell's name, as far as he should have been not retained, ever come up. It's going to, but it shouldn't. And in regards to who I think is going to win this game, I think it's going to be the Bears. Bears had their game won in week one. Very similar to what Baltimore had. The Bears had their game won. And J.J. McCarthy went Superman and really showed why he was the first-round draft pick. I still don't like him as a prospect. I still don't like him as a quarterback. However, he did show why he was a first-round draft pick. And Chicago let them off the hook. Again, very similar to what happened with Detroit and Buffalo. So I think that I think Ben Johnson isn't going to allow his team to do that again. I think he played a little conservative in that second half. Caleb missed a couple of throws he should make. Right? Caleb missed a couple of throws he should make. And I think that made Ben Johnson a little gun shy as far as continuing to call those type throws. Because they were open, NFL open throws. They just weren't completed by Caleb Williams. So I think Ben may have pulled the guns a little bit, especially when they went up. Okay, I don't want Caleb to throw this game away. So let's rein the reins in. And then by the time you needed to, you know, up those reins again, they weren't ready, right? The team was not ready and prepared. And I think that doesn't happen again. I think that the Lions start off 0-2. And the Bears get on track 1-1. All right, some other games I want to talk about. And again, every other one of these games apparently is in Jack's pack. Oh, wait, I did that in reverse. I just gave you the Bears winner. Okay, well, I had the Bears winning. So in Jack's pack, spoiler alert, the Bears, take the points on the Bears. I had the Bears pulling the upset there. But anyway, I should have just went in order. I threw my own stuff off. But the Jags at the Bengals. This is a very interesting game. Jags at Bengals. Two teams that didn't win cleanly in week one. Now, win's a win, especially in NFL, right? But two teams that didn't win cleanly. The Bengals probably think they should have beaten the Browns by more, right? A game that if the Browns makes a very makeable kick, the Bengals are staring at 0-1 on a season having opened up with the Browns. The Browns are not going to be a good team this year at all. And yet, you know, you struggled mightily offensively. Another year where the Bengals opened kind of slowly. Now, this time it was offensively. Their defense played decent. But this time they opened up slowly offensively. Joe Burrow did not play his best game. Again, a pattern that we've seen over recent years that the first couple of weeks, he's a little slower than he normally is, right? Like, he's not as crisp. He's not as, you know, the offense isn't as pretty early. Now, by week 3, 4, 5, 6, it bombs away. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and all the other guys are catching the ball over the field. But those first couple of weeks are kind of a struggle for Joe Burrow. We've seen that again. If you're the Jaguars, man, the score was not indicative of how that game played versus the Panthers. If you're the Jaguars, again, that score was not indicative at all. That game played a lot closer than 16. And I know I spoke about it the opposite way when it came down to the Packers on the Commanders. But, I mean, the Jaguars did not really control the Panthers. I think they had a couple of bigger plays that allowed them to spread that lead out. But as far as control of the game, I don't think the Jaguars really took care of the Panthers in the manner that I'm sure internally they were expecting to do. You know, I thought they were going to take it to the Panthers, maybe do that in the first half, 28-10. Or something like that in the first half. Really put the pressure on the Panthers in the second half to come out throwing the ball. And maybe push the lead out even further. I think they're trying to figure out their way with Travis Hunter. I think he ended up only with like 50-something snaps. Which he was routinely 100-something in college. And he only ended up like 50-something. Or 60-something like that in game one. So I think they're trying to figure their way out with Travis Hunter. I think they're trying to find a way to manage him. Along with expectations, along with load. And so that is kind of the fight right now. Kind of what I've seen the Jaguars trying to figure out. But as far as a winner, I'm going to go with the Bengals here. I'm going to go with the Bengals here due to home field. I think the Bengals are a 10-win team this year. I've said it on the YouTube show, and I was mocked for it. But just given their schedule, I see 10 wins available in their schedule, maybe even 11. And so getting that Cleveland one was big. But now you got to continue to move on. I think Cincinnati wins the game. The big one, the Super Bowl rematch, Eagles at Chiefs. This is going to be a game, like I said, Super Bowl rematch, man. This is some crazy history here. This is the first time quarterbacks will ever start against each other after beating each other in the Super Bowl. So, and when the stat was said, I was like, well, no, because people have played. And then I was like, well, no. Both quarterbacks had to have a victory over the other in the Super Bowl. There's only been a couple of times the matchups have happened. Like Hurts and Mahomes have gone each other twice. Brady and Manning, Eli have gone against each other twice. I'm sure Bradshaw, you know, cross path with the Cowboys quarterbacks, but there's not very many times you play the same team over, especially during your lifetime, but also to play the same quarterback and both of you guys get one. So that, I mean, both, that's never happened before. So we're entering uncharted territory with the Eagles and the Chiefs, with Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts both having to both having had defeated each other in a Super Bowl and now squaring off in a regular season game. It's never happened before. So pretty cool moment there. In regards to the game, I think Jalen Carter is going to be pissed off. He had the spitting incident with Dak Prescott. He's subsequently been fined $57,000. I think that Eagles team knows they didn't play well in week one. I think they're going to come out and try and rectify that in week two. But flipping on the other side, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs are very similar. Like, they didn't play well in week one, and they actually lost. Like, it's different to not play well and win. Like, the Eagles find a way to win. They spread them out. Jalen Hurts scrambles, first down ball game. But in regards to the Kansas City Chiefs, they didn't play well and lost. And just lost. Not only did they lose, they lost to a division rival. They lost to someone who they've counted as two wins for several years. And instead, the Chargers were able to take advantage of the Chiefs and get a huge win for not only, you know, themselves, but kind of, you know, for the program, like for the mystique of the Chargers having the ability to defeat the Chiefs, and not like that one-off that Antonio Pierce did with the Raiders and say they had figured them out and all that other stuff. But, like, you know, regardless of, you know, crazy statement by Antonio Pierce, like having the ability to win those games is big for Harbaugh and Herbert and everyone else involved with the Chargers. But it also kind of showed the kink in the armor in the Chiefs. Like, this team is getting older. Travis Kelce is getting older. He's engaged, for crying out loud. He killed Xavier Worthy. The offensive line, of course, is peeling off, and they try to rebuild it with an injured player from college. So, like, it's showing some of the kinks in the armor. And I think the Eagles win the game. I really do. I just don't see the Chiefs having enough. Just having enough. I'm about to add like an adjective to it or a word, but just having enough here. I got the Eagles winning this game. Broncos at Colts. A very interesting game between two teams with a very interesting start. So the Colts, as you guys may know or remember, or so on and so forth, absolutely, I'm talking about destroy their opponent in week one. I mean, it was brutal. I mean, it was a show. Like, the punter never punted. They ended up beating the Dolphins 33-8. I mean, it was a absolute light show. You know, 33-8 in yards. And, I mean, points, sorry. I mean, they dominated them. At one point, the Dolphins had, like, negative yards. I mean, it was tragic. If you were a Dolphins fan, if you were anybody else, it was a show by the Colts. A show of strength by the Colts. I mean, then the Broncos escaped Tennessee. 20-12. You know, that's one possession in the NFL. I think that the Titans had their chances to definitely take the lead, if not win the game against the Broncos. But at the same time, the Broncos had their chances to make it where we're not even debating or discussing if they would have ever had a chance to lose to the Tennessee Titans. So I definitely think, and I was definitely interested, rather, in this game because of that point. You got a Colts team who dominated a bad Dolphins team, and then you have a Broncos team who probably, again, in their coaches meeting, their staff meetings, are saying, like, man, we had an opportunity there to really blow that game open and we didn't. And so that is a interesting conundrum. That's an interesting side by side, a team that's riding high but played not so good team, and a team that also didn't play a really good team but had to kind of squeak out and eke out a win. That mentality is a little different. But in regards to picking this game, I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos here. I just don't see the Colts having a repeat performance. I'm going to bet against Daniel Jones as long as I can. And so it is – quintessential to see them against a good defense, to see how they handle a good offensive scene. Like, Bo Nix right now is better than Tua. Sean Payton right now is better than Mike McDaniel. I mean, Sean Payton is probably his whole life better than Mike McDaniel. And it's just, you got to see the difference in a team that's going to make the playoffs and Belize versus a team that's hoping to make the playoffs. I mean, it's just, it's a different mindset, a different environment. And then lastly, Monday Night Football, the nightcap, Chargers at Raiders. Two teams, both with pretty shocking victories. I talked about the Chargers already, defeating the Chiefs in Sao Paulo. But the Raiders go into Foxborough and through torrid conditions, defeat the Patriots in a game where they looked really good. They looked like a veteran team with a veteran coach that were going to do exactly what they were told to do. They were going to be exactly what it's supposed to be, and they were going to do their job. Now, how effective they were at their job, that's a different conversation. But they were going to give everything they had every second to the field. And that's, you know, like I said, a hallmark and a compliment to the coaching staff. It's just, you know, kudos to those guys. But back to this game, kind of a battle of styles. Both teams want to play power football. Both teams want to have very physical defenses. So it's going to be very interesting watching those two teams go at it because of their kind of common approach to football. So it's going to be very interesting to see those two teams go at each other. And my winner for that game is the Chargers. Whenever it's close, pick the quarterback. To me, it's not really close, but if you do call it close, Justin Herbert's easily the tipper. And so I am going to say that the Chargers, behind Justin Herbert, are going to win their Week 2 game against the Las Vegas Raiders and close out Week 2 with a victory. But up next, we're going to shift to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show, and now we are going to have the NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Now, if you guys were here last year, I picked 5 games per week against the spread. I forgot we weren't doing a show week 1, and I should have put my picks out. I forgot, so we're not going to count those, right? Because I don't want you guys to be like, oh man, no, he only did, you know, he been 5-0 and whatever. Like, no, we're not doing that, right? Like, I'm not going to do that with you guys, right? I want the picks to be fresh. So, for those of you who are new, every week we pick 5 games. Those 5 games ultimately get selected. Like I said, those 5 games ultimately get picked. And I pick those games. We keep track of the record all year, so on and so forth. And that is how we do Jack's Pack. So it is against the spread. All things currently are done by the ESPN app. All odds currently are done by the ESPN app. And so that is where the numbers come from. If you're wondering, like, where do I get this line? Where do I get this spread? So on and so forth. So let's get right into it. Again, we have no week 1 to go back to, so let's get right into it. First game on the docket. They're in no particular order. It's not like I'm saying, oh, you know, this is my favorite game, or so on and so forth. But the first game on the docket is Rams -5.5 over the Titans. Take the Rams. Look, it's plain and simple here. The Rams are considerably better than the Tennessee Titans. Now, this game is probably, if it's in LA, 8.5, 9, maybe even 9.5 point spread. It happens to be a game that is in Tennessee. So home team always gets an extra field goal. So whatever the neutral site spread is, then you add a field goal, and that's how you get the Vegas spreads. So they're saying on a neutral site, the Rams are 8.5 points better, over a touchdown better. However, because the game is in Tennessee, they're going to give a little credence and a little respect to home field there in Tennessee. And so therefore, they are only saying the Rams -5.5. Great. But the Rams are going to win that game by more than a touchdown. Hammer the Rams here. If you have an opportunity to get this anywhere under 7.5, you hammer it. And because they were able to get it, I'm able to get it at 5.5, take the Rams. Bucks +2.5 over the Texans, take the Bucks here. While I do love the Texans defense, I have major questions about the Bucks offensive line. I have major questions about the Texans offensive line, which I also have major questions about the Bucks offensive line. But I think that right now, Baker Mayfield and that offense is just a little bit better set up right now to win. I think that Houston has more questions than answers. I think Tampa Bay at least has answers. They just don't like them. Like, to me, it's better to have answers than not like them than not have answers at all. And so right now, I think Houston is kind of scrambling, trying to figure out how they're going to do stuff. And Tampa Bay knows how they're going to do it. They just don't necessarily like the answers. But anyway, I'm going to go with Tampa Bay here +2.5. Just got to win by a field goal or, you know, I'll be within 2 points and they're going to get a victory. I'm going to get a victory here. I think Tampa wins the game outright. Because again, I think Houston's trying to figure stuff out. I think Tampa knows what they got to do. They just don't want to do it. So I think that is the issue there. Chicago +6.5 over the Lions. Take the Bears here. Now, I'm not going to go into it again because I've already done it in the previous segment, but I've got Chicago here winning the game outright. So if you want to up your odds here, you can get Chicago outright. Same thing with Tampa. +2.5 outright is a outright instead of a better bet than +2.5. So again, if you want the Bucks to get a little better odds, go outright. If you want the Bears with a little better odds, go outright. But I've got the Bears here over the Lions. Cardinals -6.5 versus the Panthers. Take the Cardinals. Remember that Carolina team I talked about? I was like, golly. I figured that, you know, they would get run over last week, and they actually stayed in it pretty decently against the Jags. That same Panthers team isn't getting better. That same Panthers team isn't magically a better football team. That same Panthers team all of a sudden is not going to stand up to a real NFL offense. I think the Cardinals kind of got out of their kinks out playing New Orleans in week one. And they found a way to win by more than a touchdown there. I think New Orleans is better than Carolina. So I've got Arizona winning by more than 6.5. So therefore, take the Cardinals. Giants +5.5 versus Dallas. Take the Giants here. I actually think the Giants might win this game. But the main crux of it is I don't think either offense is good enough to 5.5 to be a spread. I really don't. I don't think either offense is good enough. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys offense is good enough. I don't think the Giants defense is bad enough. I truly think that the Giants have a chance of winning this game. I think Russell Wilson has an opportunity here to make that conversation interesting. I think it's about to get real loud for Jackson Dart in New York if it's not screaming already. And I think Russell Wilson in this game has an opportunity to make that noise quiet a little bit. Dallas is not done. I mean, they're down De'Ron Bland. They obviously don't have Micah Parsons. Kenny Clark didn't do a whole heck of a lot. And I think on the other side of the ball, that Giants defensive line is ridiculous. And it ain't like Dallas got their old line of 2016, 2017. Like, that's a normal, if not slightly below average line. I think that Giants D-line is going to have their way with them up front. And I just think the Giants may win the game all right, but definitely take the +5.5. So just to recap, I've got the Rams -5.5 over the Titans, Bucks +2.5 over the Texans, Bears +6.5 over the Lions, Cardinals -6.5 over the Panthers, and Giants +5.5 over Dallas. But up next, we're going to shift to college football and talk about what's going down there. Welcome into the show, or welcome back into the show, rather, as we are now discussing college football. Now, this won't be a really long segment, but I do want to hit on some key games and kind of give my quick thoughts on some of the big games this week. First off, college football is kind of enters that early conference period. So, like, you know, there's some, like, all the games I'm going to, well, not all the games, but, you know, three of the five games I'm discussing are conference games. And it's kind of where if your conference is a 9-team conference, you're starting conference play. But if you're an 8-game conference game, you're not in conference play yet. And so that's kind of the, not dilemma, but it's kind of the weirdness in college football that a lot of the power fours don't have the same rules. Like the Big Ten's playing 9 games, but the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 are playing 8. But now the SEC's going to 9 next year. I think ACC's considering going to 9. Like the rules aren't the same all the way around. It makes complications at the end, but it's neither here nor there. Regardless, these are 5 games I want to touch on quickly and be there to discuss. So, number one is Florida at LSU. I think it's one of the bigger games of the weekend. I'm also an LSU alumni, an LSU fan, and so I want to talk about this game anyway. I have an older brother who's a Florida fan, so it's kind of a family situation. But also, I think this is a very interesting game. Kind of a, it feels trap gamey. It went from college game day to trap game. Like, and I say this because Florida just lost to USF. They were embarrassed by USF. I mean, they lost 18-16, but USF? I mean, I don't know the last time Florida's lost to an in-state opponent that wasn't Florida State and Miami. I think it was like the 90s or something like that. Like, it's been a long time since the University of Florida has lost to anybody not named Miami or Florida State in the state of Florida. And so that was embarrassing. You can tell by the reaction of the USF coaches. Like, that was a monumental upset on several levels. And now they go into Tiger Stadium at 6:30. By the time the second quarter hits, it's Tiger Stadium at night. Good luck. It's sold out. It's a gold game. And this could start a spiral for Billy Napier at Florida. He's going to make it through the year. Buyout's too substantial not to. However, I mean, we are talking a monumental spiral. Out of their last, I think, 10 games, 8 of them are ranked now. I mean, it is crazy what Florida has to go through the gauntlet. And the gauntlet didn't catch Billy Napier and them last year, but it's looking like it might get them this year and ultimately cost Napier his job. But an absolutely brutal situation. I don't think LSU makes it no better. I think LSU wins the game by double digits. The only thing that concerns me at LSU is the offense as far as the timing aspect. I think Florida's getting the best pass rusher back, so that's going to be a problem because he hasn't been on film. And so when you have a player who hasn't been on film, there's no telling what he's doing this year, there's no telling what he's lining up, so on and so forth. He hasn't been on film. Also, the other thing that's big right now is that LSU has a couple of major injuries. Braylon Moore, who's their starting center, SEC offensive lineman of the week in week one, and Tre'Davious Green, the monster at tight end, all 6'7" of them, are both. Braylon Moore is questionable, probably will play. Tre'Davious Green is a true game time decision following injuries they suffered against Louisiana Tech. But Florida comes in fairly healthy. They're getting one of the pass rushers back. DJ Lagway seems to be in a good headspace-ish. Now, they struggled against USF. I'm sure Blake Baker has seen what USF worked against them and probably, you know, concocting some mad genius version of it. But it's going to be a very interesting game, a very, you know, tight game. I've got LSU winning by 10, you know, getting a touchdown at the end maybe to separate it, or maybe 13 touchdown at the end to separate it. But I don't expect a blowout by any means. Clemson at Georgia Tech, a battle in the ACC, a interesting game for Clemson. So Clemson typically kind of runs the ACC. They end up winning it last year and stealing a playoff spot. You know, they kind of run the ACC, but Georgia Tech has a very interesting physical style. Hunter King is a dude at quarterback. I mean, he is physical. He doesn't care. It's almost like the more you beat on him, the better he plays. And so he's going to be the high end center for Georgia Tech. This is the same Clemson team that Did not do anything offensively in the second half against LSU. Struggled in the first half offensively against Troy. So now you are going to line up against a Georgia Tech team that is known for hard-nosed play, man. Those guys are physical. Probably why they get beat up so much, but those guys are absolutely physical. They are trying to send messages every single time that they line up. I mean, they are trying to send a message. And, you know, that's great for Georgia Tech, right? And ultimately, I do think Clemson wins this game, but it is a trap game. I am declaring it the trap game of the week. Clemson walks in this game and thinks it's confident and all hunky-dory, they will lose by two touchdowns to Georgia Tech. I've seen it done under this style of system. Georgia Tech walks in and beats somebody they have no business beating because you take them lightly. So I think Georgia Tech is going to be very interesting there. I think Clemson survives it late, but it would not shock me at all if GT gets a victory. Georgia at Tennessee, the biggest ranked game of the year. Georgia at Tennessee, man. I love conference matchups where, hey, dude, you've got no choice. You've got to beat that dude to get where you got to go. And it kind of reminds me of the old SEC, right? Like, you've got to bow your back to beat them to even have a chance in the national championship game. That's why the national championship game for so long was like the SEC Invitational. I think we won like six or seven straight because the amount of physicality you had to get to even survive the conference was more than most people have to do to survive anywhere else. And so I think that, you know, Georgia and Tennessee now both are physical teams. It's going to be on the road. It's going to be in Rocky Top. It's going to be loud. I think that volume, I think we get a lot of questions before I give a pick. A lot of questions are going to be answered. Georgia hasn't been tested, really. Tennessee really hasn't been tested. So these are two fairly untested teams that are going to have to figure it out against each other on the fly. But winning this game, I've got a huge win for the Tennessee program. And I think the home field is the difference. It is going to be a loud home field, a very loud home field in Rocky Top. And I think that Tennessee is squeaks out with the win, but it will not be easy by any means. Speaking of that South Florida team, they're ranked 18th and they're on the road at Miami. A lot of questions there are going to get answered. Remember we talk about questions being answered? Was South Florida fluky over Florida? Was South Florida actually legit now? And by legit, I mean, are they going to, you know, compete for the conference and try and steal an at-large bid, so on and so forth in the playoff? Or is it a fluke? And then Miami punishes them and sends them, you know, relegates them back to the level of mid-level Florida team. We're going to find out, right? We are going to find out what is the state of the South Florida football team. We're going to find out, you know, just how real Miami is. They got a big opening win. But now we're going to find out just how real Miami is. And so, you know, a lot of questions are going to get answered in that game. I got Miami winning it. Close, though, and giving USF a lot of leverage when it comes down to playoff seeding because, you know, every time if you lose closely. If you win by a lot. Like, you want stuff that you want your negatives to be hidden and your positives to be highlighted in front of a national committee. And so that is definitely a big, what am I talking about? Thing in regards for the playoffs is that everybody gonna watch every game, right? So you gotta do stuff that stands out when you do it good to try and get that playoff seeding. And Miami currently, it's just like anybody else, especially in that conference, fighting for playoff spots. And then to me, my personal big one is Texas A&M at Notre Dame. My personal big one is Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Rare trip for a school down south to go into South Bend. Very interesting to see how Notre Dame handles kind of the loss and dealing with that bounce back. While Texas A&M and Marcel Reed, like, they're on cloud nine right now. They're feeling good about themselves. They think that they are, you know, going to compete for the SEC, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of positives going on in the Texas A&M football program. However, Notre Dame right now, you took the L in week one. You're reeling a little bit. This would be a big one to kind of get that mojo and that swagger coming back for Notre Dame. Who I have winning it? I have the Notre Dame Irish winning it at home. I think home field advantage is going to matter in the fourth quarter. I don't really believe in Marcel Regis yet. He torched LSU last year, but I don't really believe in him just yet. And so, therefore, I am going with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. But up next, we're going to discuss the WNBA, kind of give you a mini preview of the playoffs, along with discussing the league's MVP, or will be, Asia Wilson. Welcome back into the show, and now we're going to discuss the WNBA as they are ramping up towards their playoff and also their award season. So they're doing both. They're getting closer to their playoff, and they're ramping up close to their award season. And so we're going to do kind of both kind of quickly. So the playoffs matchups are as followed. Golden State faces Minnesota. Golden State, in year one of their franchise's history, makes the playoffs. An expansion team made the playoffs. Pretty cool there. They draw Minnesota. Congratulations. With arguably the best player on the planet, Nafisa Collier. Indiana surviving, and even without Caitlin Clark, they've made the playoffs. They face off against Ryan Howard, Brittany Griner, and the Atlanta Dream. New York, Stu York, the defending champions, with Sabrina Ionescu, Brianna Stewart, and the rest of the crew. They draw Phoenix Mercury with Alyssa Thomas, Dawana Bonner, and the rest of that crew. That's who they draw. And then Seattle. You know, Seattle, despite all the stuff they've gone through, right? Seattle is still in the playoffs, and they face Vegas, the hottest team by far. The hottest team in the WNBA. So hot, they've won 16 straight games. They're on fire. And they're led by the soon-to-be league MVP, again, Asia Wilson. She finishes her season 23.4 points a game, 10.2 rebounds a game, 3.1 assists per game. She also picks up 2.3 blocks a game. She does it on 50% shooting, 42% from three, 85.5%. From the free throw line. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. She gets 21 double doubles. Her scoring efficiency is 1.42, which that's ridiculous. I mean, she is the best player on the planet. I know I said Nafisa Collier has an argument. She does. I went into the season going when people tried to crown Nafisa Collier. Just crowned her. Like, oh, she's the best player. And what did I say? Like, did Asia Wilson retire? Did I not know? I mean, to just solemnly dismiss Asia Wilson, I thought was very disrespectful to the level of player Asia Wilson is. And I fought back on it. I pushed back on it immediately. Because I'm like, man, like, Asia's been the best player for years. To me, she hasn't done anything to not still be the best player. And yet, you know, it was just, to me, solemnly dismissed what Asia Wilson did this season and what her history has been. She is the AP Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year. She finishes first in points, first in total rebounds, first in blocks, first in steals plus blocks, first in PER, which is player efficiency rating, first in win shares, first in 30-point games, and first in 20-point double-doubles. Let's be perfectly honest. She's the best player on the planet. No disrespect to Nafisa Collier. No disrespect to Brianna Stewart. And I've said it before. And I've said it to friends. I've said it before. That's the big three. It's like how I feel about the NBA GOAT debate. As long as your answer is either Michael Jordan, LeBron James, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I have no argument. No disrespect to Kobe Bryant. No disrespect to Magic Johnson. Like, right? But if you're, if your argue, if your person is either Kobe, is either, sorry, not Kobe, LeBron, Kareem, or Michael, I've got no argument. So I feel about the WNBA best player in the world, or the female best player in the world. As long as your, as long as one of the names is Breanna Stewart, Nafisa Collier, Asia Wilson, I've got no argument. I think I firmly believe it is Asia Wilson. But I have no argument if one of the answers is either Breanna Stewart or Nafisa Collier. Because Nafisa Collier, before her injury, to me was league MVP. The Aces were struggling. You know, New York was rolling. So it's kind of hard to get that MVP the year after a championship because that team's already good. And so, you know, you kind of lose that credit. But I think that Asia Wilson is the best player in the world. I think she's going to win league MVP. And I think it's very deservedly so. But that is all I have for you guys today. I am incredibly excited to be back. Try to make this thing weekly. Schedule's kind of evening out a little bit. So try and make this thing weekly. Get back to the business of the JTS, Just in Time Sports podcast. The social media page is rolling. Make sure you guys follow at JTime Sports on all your favorite social medias. And, of course, like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast if you like what you heard. But this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.